Welcome to the conference. Please note today's call is being recorded. Please stand by.
Hi, everybody. This is Andrew Leisinga from the National Quality Forum. This is the Patient Safety Standing Committee's post-draft report comment call. What we're going to be doing today is just taking a quick review over the comments that were submitted during the public comment period. We are not going to be doing any voting on this call. We will be, for any voting necessary, we will be doing that online in a at a point subsequent to this call. So just to let everybody know that, we won't be doing any voting today. We may be making some decisions on whether or not to reconsider, take a reconsideration vote on some of these measures. Otherwise, we're just going to have discussion at this point, and then we will use that to inform our voting within the next week or so via an online survey. With that, I'll just see if Dr. Septimus, do you have any introductory remarks or anything you want to say, or should we just move into our review of the comments? Ed, oh, I'm not hearing Ed. I thought he was on here. But I guess.
Yeah, I was, do you not hear me?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't hear you. I think you were on mute.
I may have been. Yeah, that's perfectly good. I think we just want to jump in and listen to the comments.
Okay, great. Let's do that. And you all should have received a memo that gives a brief summary of some of the major comments and themes. And we were just planning to sort of walk through that to address the comments. And I'll just briefly sort of describe what the comments were on each measure. And we'll skip over some because there are all of the comments we didn't think required a formal response from the committee. But please do let us know if there's something that we've skipped over and you think does warrant discussion and you think that the group should focus a bit of conversation around that. Just let us know. Otherwise, we may skip over some of the comments that don't really require a formal response from the committee. So let's see. I'll just note that there were a number of comments around the HAI measures, the CAUDI measure and the CLABSI measure, asking for expressing a desire to see an outcome measure similar to this developed in the outpatient setting. We figured that the steering committee largely agreed with that, and we'll add that to our recommendations in the report on future measure development. But just let us know if you object to that or if you have any particular thoughts that you'd like to share on that topic. For measure 0464, this is prevention of catheter-related bloodstream infections. This is an ASA measure. And we did get a request from the developer themselves to hold some further discussion on this measure and to reconsider the decision not to recommend the measure. Largely, the developer cited the reductions that have occurred in CLABSI rates since the measure has been endorsed and reported by anesthesiologists, and noted that there is a remaining gap in adherence to the measure, and just sort of expressed that they believe this measure remains very important and should not be retired from endorsement by the committee.
This is Lisa McGifford. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the measure that's a process measure, correct?
It is. This is a process measure, correct.
And who is the developer?
The American Society of Anesthesiologists.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So are there any thoughts on that subject from the committee? Is there any interest in reconsidering your decision on this measure, considering the developer's comments?
So the developer is asking us to continue this measure, and we recommended to discontinue it because it was a 90-some percent compliance, or?
Right.
Remind me.
I believe that's correct. Let me pull up the report here.
And this is over.
I think one of the issues with this measure was that the evidence really linking use of this to reduce infections was not as strong as I think that was a major point of contention, was that the evidence is not totally clear linking this to outcomes, and we do have an outcome measure for this.
This is Laura Artizone. I just wanted to add too that the APIC kind of, if we could present the balanced kind of point here, they agreed with us that we should get rid of this, not continue to endorse this measure because it wasn't so reliable and valid.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. We did get that comment in support of the committee's decision as well. Any other thoughts or comments from the committee? So we will, I think, at least tentatively, it sounds like the committee does not want to reconsider their vote, but we'll follow up after this via email and maybe get a more formal sort of show of hands or vote on that question of whether to reconsider the measure, but it sounds like we're not leaning towards that. So let's go ahead and... Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next measure. There's a variety of measures around the various radiation safety measures. A number of people thought that it was a very important area to begin measurement in, and were concerned that the committee's recommendation to not endorse these measures might send a signal to the field that radiation safety is not an important issue or that there's not a concern about radiation exposure levels. There were, I believe, some supportive measures, some comments supportive of the committee's decision as well, but we just wanted to see if the committee had any thoughts about those comments and whether you'd like to consider revoting on that measure either, or the set of radiation safety measures.
This is Lisa Schreiber.
I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay, go ahead. Michelle, would you go ahead, Michelle?
Thank you. Yes, thanks for the opportunity to comment. I had been one of the people reviewing this, and I think by the end of the session, many of us felt badly that none of the radiation measures had actually passed. This was the first one that was presented, and it was voted down because it was an outcomes measure, and we really didn't go any further. In subsequent deliberations that we had, it became apparent that there was an exception that we could have moved forward, and I wonder if we had applied that exception for this particular argument, if there would have been more support at the time. So I guess I'm one who might be in favor of rediscussing it, or at least some of the radiology measures, understanding full well that we didn't have a very good outcome for measure for it, but that this could be one that fell into that exception category.
Okay, thanks.
This is Lisa McGifford. I'd like to speak when I have a minute.
Sure, go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, I think that it's really important that we, in our report, that we address the importance of these, of measuring this, and the disappointment that the committee had that we did not have a good outcome measure. And it was my feeling that if the developers were pushed hard enough, they would come up with a good outcome measure. And I'm very concerned that if we go with some of these process measures, they'll just slide along for years and years and years without an outcome measure. And I just think that we could make a really strong statement about why, you know, everybody thought it was an important thing to measure, but that these did not get at the problem.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. That's a good point. And we will certainly, in any case, we will certainly do. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Kimberly Applegate. And I hear what you're saying. I think that as someone who's very keen to get at outcomes right now, the outcomes we have are the sentinel events that the Joint Commission requires for skin burns, and those are very rare. In terms of daily use, I think what we want to do is, I mean, I think we have to think a little differently about what we're trying to achieve here, which is education and awareness, which is what we're doing in a lot of safety culture metrics. And I would argue that we are making huge steps if we have a process measure. And I'm not sure that we want to climb the whole mountain right now and wait for an outcomes measure, because right now we cannot link medical radiation with cancer. What we can do is say that there might be a link, and I think if you're careful about what you read, and I can give everybody plenty of information from the scientists who have spent their entire career looking at this in the National Council for Radiation Protection, there is no definite link. I'm very concerned there might be as a pediatric radiologist, and so we want to be very careful, and we want to be more prudent than we've been, especially in the United States with radiation. So I think that's where we want to be. We want to be more careful than we've been about our use of radiation, and what we're doing is we're making it very, very easy to use these machines without being educated in how to use them well. So I just want to put that out there as what our goal should be in terms of education and better use of these machines by people who have no training in them.
This is Steve Lawless from the Moores. I have a comment, Andrew, if I could talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with actually all the speakers so far with this. I think from an NQF standpoint and the turndown of some of the measures we're talking about process, I guess I need guidance from the NQF in terms of where NQF is going. We have lots of process measures, which are very at the best, very tactical measures, versus does NQF want to be locked into 500 different measures on processes versus be really purist, thank people for all the things they're submitting, not saying if you haven't hit the list of NQF, it's not used anymore, but what does NQF want to go with it? They want to become, here are the overarching outcomes we want or overarching processes and be able to declare success, or do they want to have every step along the process be guided by a process measure?
Yeah, and I would say that's a debate that is certainly occurring across different committees quite often. I don't think we want to give you too much direction as sort of NQF, but as a standing committee with the now sort of the responsibility for stewarding this portfolio of measures in patient safety, I think you as the committee should be giving us input on that, whether, you know, you think we should be moving towards outcomes in any given area, or if there should be a balance with process measures. That's something that we're certainly very eager to hear from you in terms of the feedback we should be giving to developers and that will go in the report, you know, as guidance to developers and sort of feedback on future measure development efforts.
This is Leslie Schultz. To that end, we don't have a radiation measure now. I think we feel the need for having one, and a starting spot would be a process measure that could rally folks around the education and understanding and asking some better questions, but have something in the portfolio that we can agree upon and build toward outcome measures. We have nothing right now.
Right, and just to comment on that, so, you know, one thing that's evolved over the years with NQF is the standards by which the measures are graded against the various criteria. The threshold for getting through the NQF process for process measures is higher. Certainly we want processes that are clearly tied to outcomes. So just as you think through this, I think that was one of the discussion points for these measures And that's why there's certainly a desire for outcome measures in this area or process measures that are clearly tied to outcomes.
Yeah, this is Martha Bead.
Yes, go ahead, Martha.
Yeah, I've been very concerned about this particular set of measures and how the voting went, and I was quite struck by the commenter who made the point, which I'm somewhat familiar with, that a poor, an overdose reaction to radiation of any kind can take years to develop, and that consequently, having proof that of a cause and effect relationship could be, it easily could be a decade off and maybe further than that. And meanwhile, what do we do to protect patients if we can do anything at all? And what came to me, which may be my naivete, is that if we can take a closer look at what the other developed countries are doing and the European standards for these kinds of issues, maybe we can get a measure that way that would be workable at least, for a few years.
I want to tell you, this is Kimberly, that this has been long required in all outside the United States. If they have any ability to record, they follow the European standards, and that's based on the International Council for Radiation Protection and the Basic Safety Standards. They must record all the data, all the radiation data.
So this is Lisa McGifford again. I think I would recommend if this is revisited, it needs to be revisited in another face-to-face with going through these. We went through these painstakingly, and I do believe that it should be, the radiation levels should be measured, and that should be the measure, that they should be measured and they should be published, not just measured and shown to the people who are using it, but to show it to the patients, too. And so if we are to revisit this and not go with a vote that we made face-to-face, I think we need to have another meeting and go over all the evidence and all the things we discussed, because we did discuss this quite thoroughly, and there was a lot of disappointment in not having good measures and having measures that have a fee to them, and all kinds of things that came up during the discussions need to be revisited.
So, all right. We'll maybe follow up with the committee again to see whether there is what kind of interest there is in reconsidering these measures. I should note that we actually have gotten some communication from the American College of Radiology. They were one of the developers of a couple of the radiation safety measures, and they are we're in discussions with them about some additional measures that they have in development. I believe they have a number of outcome measures in of different types. So they certainly are moving forward, I think, in response to the committee's guidance to them during the meeting. And those could be submitted for consideration in a subsequent project. So I just wanted to note that. But again, we'll follow up with the committee to see if there is sufficient support for reconsidering the endorsement decisions on these measures.
Andrew, Charlotte Alexander here.
Yes,
just one follow-up on that. It would be more meaningful to me, rather than just documenting the radiation time, if there were a threshold that were acknowledged as a threshold that it would be desirable to stay below because of an increased risk of injury, if we could then have people report the amount of times they went over that threshold or some indication of harm. Kimberly may be able to address that better.
Yeah. The issue is that there are a lot of factors that go into calculating that, and there are some guidelines from the interventional or heavy user community, both European and American, and we tried to harmonize those data from those communities. There are guidelines, but it's based on a number of things, including the size of the patient. The bigger the patient, the more dose there is, the amount of digital runs there are, the amount of magnification. So there, unfortunately, there's no magic number, but there is a 60-minute fluoro time that kind of is a trigger. So there are different criteria for what to use for reporting risk. and we can, I'd be happy to talk about that at another meeting.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Well, yeah. this is Ed. Let me ask, is there a measure that you can conceive of that could be linked to an outcome that maybe the developer should go back and resubmit?
Well, there are degrees of risk, and obviously you can link the longer the floral time, the higher the risk there is of a skin burn. I mean, that's an outcome. And that's why the international community wants people to track it. And they not only want to track the time, but they want to track the machine dose output. So anything that they can track, depending on how old the equipment is, they want to put it in the patient record. But I don't have a one dose unit that I can give you.
So what you're saying is it should be measured, but in terms of meeting the NQF criteria about tying it to an outcome, we may not be there.
Well, we can set some. There are the criteria from the guideline that people use, and we can give some criteria like a threshold for when to be worried. The problem is that because patients are different sized and there's different. Positioning of the tube, it's not simple. It's a complicated.
No, I got that. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, everyone. Yeah. So, we'll follow up on that, and we can move on at this point to maybe one of the larger discussions we'll have, which is on the sepsis ad hoc review. And
how could we have guessed that?
Excuse me?
How could we have not have guessed that one?
Yes. Of course. And I don't know if, Jesse, do you want to give a quick summary of what the comments were or if there were any new issues that were raised?
Sure. So just to remind everyone, this refers to the item F, which is the requirement for invasive monitoring with a central venous catheter for all patients with severe sepsis and septic shock. There were several comments, as you can see, that came in, again, sort of both sides of this from a lot of the similar people who were on the previous, the previous extensive discussion that we had on this. I think everyone has the summary here and also has the comments that were submitted. Also, Sean Townsend, who is on the call, submitted a separate letter, which you should have received. In looking through everything, I'm not sure there was a whole lot of new information that came in this time around. But I'll, let the committee judge for themselves based on this summary and also based on the comments that came in.
Thanks, Jesse. So, yeah, we had some comments that were requested a reconsideration of this decision and a number of comments that were supportive of the committee's decision as well. So do we have any thoughts from the committee on whether you saw anything new that might warrant a different decision or some further discussion?
Yeah, Martha again?
Yes.
What I was wondering about is I really read very, very carefully all of the comments that came in, and I was very concerned about some of the technical issues in terms of how we handled breaking down a composite measure. I thought that was – I was squeamish about it at the time, and I think it's Sean Thompson. His comments really raised some concerns in my mind about the committee's process with dealing with that measure in terms of deconstructing a composite measure. And I just wondered if somebody could just give us a briefing on, what the technical side of that was and in terms of has that been done before? Is it legitimate? Because otherwise, I think we do need a revote for sure if we didn't follow NQF's own protocol. Thanks.
Thanks, Martha. I mean, this was a bit of a different situation because this is not a typical endorsement review. It was really an ad hoc review focused specifically on that particular element of the measure. And I don't know if Sean had any specific comments about what the impact would have on sort of the composite measure as a whole or the composite score. And does anybody on the committee have any thoughts about that?
Well, and also just to comment there, so there are specific NQF rules around composite measure. The definition of a composite measure would be one, you know, sort of similar to like PSI 90 is a composite measure, which is a whole bunch of separate measures that are put together into one measure. This is really sort of a bundle more than necessarily a composite measure. You know, sort of similar to the 464, which we voted down. This is a series of activities that unless you have all of the activities together, you don't get credit for the measure. So I think we want to talk about this as sort of a bundle rather than necessarily a composite measure.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jesse. Unlike the ARC's PSI 90 composite measure, this does not have a similar kind of weighting scheme for each of the elements, but rather is an all or none measure. You hit all of the items and you pass, or if you don't get one or any of them, then you don't pass, I believe. So that there are fewer concerns, I would think, in terms of the effect it would have on measure scores. It wouldn't throw off any kind of weighting scheme or anything like that. I believe we do have Dr. Townsend on the line, and maybe we can...
Can I ask a question first before we go to Dr. Townsend?
Yes, please.
Has NQF ever dealt with this kind of process before about when new evidence comes out, you reexamine? Because Dr. Townsend made a pretty... saying that the NQF staff didn't prepare the committee for the rigor of the evaluation, that we had done something that wasn't appropriate with the process. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, because we talked about this at length and debated for a very long time. So I want to make sure that if we really follow the process that you followed before, when you have to reexamine when new evidence comes out, that we really didn't do anything wrong by this measure.
No, I think we have followed the process for an ad hoc review here. I don't think we've, you know, had multiple levels of review internally in terms of the process that we put this through. I mean, I think that the committee, you know, had a pretty robust discussion about it. But, you know, if you feel like you did not get sufficient information, I mean, that's something you can let us know, and if you feel again that it would be worth revoting on this measure in light of that, you know, you have the that's within your purview to do.
This is Lisa McGifford. I think, you know, the NQF staff prepares us to a certain extent, but in this particular measure, I felt like we got a front row seat to an active debate between scientists on several occasions. And I feel that I learned a lot listening to the discussions, and it made me think of these much differently. And frankly, on something technical as this, it seems like what we got with this measure was probably better than any kind of analysis or preparation that the NQF staff could have gotten. We got the preparation from the scientists involved.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Any other thoughts on either the process or on the measure itself, whether there was any new information that would prompt a reconsideration?
You had asked me to wait, Andrew. It's Sean.
Oh, hi, Sean.
if you wanted to speak, I would.
Yeah, it sounds like we don't have any comments at this particular moment. Maybe you could just take a few minutes.
Three or four minutes.
Brief.
I think my major concern is the issue with the composite. I had wished the committee had taken the comprehensive meta-analysis that Dr. Rivers provided into consideration, which shows, even after process, there's no still a positive effect for early goal-directed therapy. But minus that one scientific comment and criticism, the thing I'm mainly concerned about is that in order to get a process measure like this passed, the standard for validity and reliability requires a comprehensive statistical analysis for a composite measure. And that process is very carefully defined by NQF. And I was required at the time we built this to take all of our data from 200 hospitals across the country and to analyze that in that very rigorous format to prove that it was valid, meaning that if you did this series of things together, you achieved the same effect reliably, that ultimately we had an effect on outcomes. And the same thing for reliability, that the measure was reproducible. The concern I have is if you dismantle this composite measure, you've untested this element. We don't know what the composite does. And I'll give a very specific example, and I'll let you discuss it some. But if you remove element F, you've taken out the requirement to monitor ongoing blood volume issues and perfusion adequacy. And what you've left in place is you give a fluid bolus, you put patients on vasopressors, and then you tell the clinician good luck. And that's exactly what we had prior to the Rivers trial. So this new measure actually has the potential for harm to patients, a true harm to patients, because vasopressors without monitoring volume status and perfusion issues alone can lead to tissue ischemia, digital ischemia, and loss of lungs and limbs. And this is totally untested territory now. So, you know, I understand the drive to potentially remove these elements based on process, but what you've left us with is something we know nothing about. And that's the bulk of my concern.
Thanks, Sean. Go ahead, Jesse.
I think also Don, are you on the line with us? Don Yilley?
Were you there, Dr. Yilley? I thought I heard something.
Can you hear me?
Manny Rivers.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Thanks again for the opportunity. The measure as it sits now, without the F component, does not return us back to 1999 in any way, shape, or form. The measure before 2012, which is where most of the benefit that we ascribe to all this, did not have. What was added in recently was the central venous catheter, and we now have large-scale randomized data that suggests that that's not mandatory in all patients. The question isn't whether it's harmful. Is it mandatory in order to get the good outcome? And what we're going to do is to ask people to do an intervention in almost half the folks that they can't really benefit from. That does not sound like a quality measure to me. All of the meta-analysis data comes from trials of different levels of different grades of quality, many of whom didn't fully subscribe to the entire goal-directed therapy process, including the central venous catheter. So in my view, the meta-analysis actually makes the point that the proximal steps, A through E, are much more important, and that even when you can't follow the entire thing, you get a dramatic benefit, and that's what we're seeking here right now. So I think it's a mischaracterization of the data, and no one is asking to go back to 1999. Your measure without F will not take us back to 1999.
I can only remark that it's not tested. Dr. Yilley can hypothesize that's true, but when people are forced under a measurement scheme to give people a simple fluid bolus and then place them on vasopressors and do nothing else, he does not know what will happen.
We do know that. We know that from an exceptionally large trial that was just published. We know exactly what happens with that.
We actually don't know what happens with that. We have no idea about what the effect to those patients would be if they were under a measurement scheme endorsed by the government. Your trial was not a test of a measure. It was rather a clinical trial.
I'm gonna ask to just see if we have any thoughts from the committee at this point. If there's any discussion from any of our committee members.
I do have to make one remark, Andrew, before I don't make any further remarks.
Yes.
We've talked about this substantially, and we are prepared to withdraw the entire measure if Element F has to be removed, because we can't be responsible for the possible patient harm that could occur.
Thank you, Sean. And thank you to both Dr. Townsend and Dr. Yealy for joining us. Again, does the committee have any questions for either of those?
No, it's Steve Lawless, and I'm an intensivist, and I've heard all the arguments, and we've been talking about this for months, and I just let you remind everybody, we're not the Supreme Court, and I know this is not a closing arguments, and this is not a who's right, who's wrong. We're trying to make an informed decision and getting guidance. And I know everybody's very passionate about this, and it almost looks like there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. And it's not, it should not be that way. It should be, you know what, the outcome is, guys, the survival of septic shock has gotten better. People are refining things and not in judging it. I suggest the two of you guys and your teams get together and as a team work it out and give us a recommendation rather than having taking sides on this. Because quite honestly, my patience level has kind of run out a little bit with it, hearing this. And I think the idea of you guys getting together and informing us in a uniform way of what to do this would be probably the best approach in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dr. Lawless. Any other comments or questions from the committee?
Hi, this is Jason Adelman. I have one comment. First of all, I appreciate the last comment, and I just wanted to add that in assessing this measure, I tried really hard to understand all the research that underlies it, and there's hundreds of articles. Some of them are very well done, randomized controlled trials. Some of them are observational studies, but there's so much information. And the experts on the phone are so far ahead of the rest of us, even if we're, general patient safety experts, we don't have the level of expertise in sepsis that these guys have. And if we are going to at all look at this further, it would be helpful to me if they could help us narrow down which of all of the articles that are out there we should focus on. I'm not sure that we're going to be continuing on, but if we are, it's just very, very difficult. I think on the surviving sepsis campaign, if you look at all the references, there are just so many. I just found it very, very difficult. I just want to say that.
Thank you, Jason. All right. Well, I don't think we want to make a decision quite yet right now on the phone on this. So, again, we will follow up. We'll be sending you a memo with a number of issues in follow-up to this call. We just kind of wanted to have a bit of discussion while we had the time. But again, we'll be voting subsequent to this, and I'm actually voting on whether to reconsider some of these measures as well. Any final thoughts on the sepsis bundle ad hoc review?
I would just comment I'd be happy to sit with Dr. Yealy and try to work out a compromise position. I have no problem with that.
I'm happy to do the same.
Thank you both. All right, so I'm going to skip over a few of the measures here. Some of them are repetitive, related to the radiation safety measure issue that we've already discussed. Let's go to we thought maybe we should discuss measure 2337. Antipsychotic use in children under 5 years old. There were still, we had some debate and discussion about this issue at the meeting. There were some who still thought it may be, commenters who thought it may be inappropriate to have this as a quality measure, given that it may be appropriate in some instances to provide antipsychotics to children under 5 years old. I think most of the comments were supportive, more supportive of the committee's decision, but we wanted to just bring that up and see if there were any further thoughts from the committee on this issue.
This is basically different. I would just say that that point of view was brought up in the committee, and we heard it and discussed it.
It was, yes. Okay. All right. Well, beyond that, the major thing that I think we wanted to address on this call, in addition to those few comments and the some discussion on the sepsis ad hoc, was the ARCS measure number 0531, PSI 90. This is the patient safety composite. And as you may recall, the committee had requested that the developer go back and add three additional components to the measure that had been actually included in the measure previously. They did not include them in the measure that was submitted, in the version that was submitted for your review. But they added those three components back in and reweighted the composite based on that, which again was one of the major concerns of the committee, was the weighting scheme for that measure. And I know we are actually waiting on Dr. Romano to join us at 3 o'clock. We're running a little bit of ahead of time here. But I wondered if Pam Owens is on the line, if she might be able to just give us a bit of a summary of the changes that were made to the measure and what the implications of that are and what the and maybe some new information on the new weighting scheme. Pam, are you on?
I am, and thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. First of all, thank you so much, Andrew, for trying to wait for Patrick. Patrick actually is in court this morning, and he knows that at 3 o'clock he will be able to join us. And so I will try the best I can in the next 15 minutes, but it wouldn't surprise me if our conversation takes longer than 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I also very much appreciate your willingness to receive our submission of the reweighted PSI 90. For those of you who don't know, when it originally went to NQF for submission, it did actually include all 11 indicators. And then the steering committee in 2009 wanted three indicators removed. We did not actually remove the NQF endorsed version of the indicator. Going into this was only an 8-item indicator, and that's why it was presented as it was presented. But in terms of maintaining it in our QI software, et cetera, we actually maintained those three additional indicators and then gave the option for people to change the weighting if they wanted to, so that they weren't zero weights for those three indicators, but in fact they could calculate something different. But the NQF endorsed version going into it was an 8-item indicator composite, and what I submitted to you is back to the 11-item composite. We feel like this revised weighting then is, of course, more consistent with the original conception and design of the PSIs that was vetted through several technical panels in terms of how to come up with a composite and which indicators to include in that composite. The revised weighting does continue to account for reliability of the indicator and the prevalence of the patient safety event. We actually did hear taking into account another component in terms of weighting, and that is in terms of is this measure related to the burden of cost or some other component of that. However, that was beyond, we had 1 month to work on this, and that would have required bringing together a committee to really vet what additional weighting factors we might want to consider and is putting on the table going into a new contract year, which we're hoping to have a new contract this summer, to really analyze whether that weighting should also include it. But to go back to the original, which was 11 items, that's what we submitted here. We feel that the revised weighting balances the total weight more equitably and fairly across the 11 different hospital-associated and safety-related events. No one single indicator comprises more than 32% of the total weight. I think this reweighted composite sends a clearer and more consistent signal to users about safety-related events and performance across all hospitals, and the reweighted composite retains and improves the desirable properties of the previous one, including consistency, repeatability, and the ability to discriminate across hospitals. And I will tell you, I had originally put in a memo you may have previously received that we weren't, given the time limit, able to calculate the reliability overall for the reweighted PSI 90. We were able to accomplish it with between the time that I originally submitted the memo to NQF and then on Friday I did actually get the revised estimate. So in the memo you received over the weekend, that would have included the reweighted PSI 90 reliability estimates, and those are the average hospital signal-to-noise ratio. If you use all payer data, that's 0.785. If you were to use 1 year of Medicare fee-for-service data, that's 0.689. And if you were to use 2 years of Medicare fee-for-service data, that's 0.7674. The thing that we were also able to do, I know several of you, at least in the committee, mentioned, well, how do you take all payer discharge data and how does that relate to, you know, its use in terms of using it with Medicare fee-for-service data? So we were able to show you the reliability and the validity using both the all payer SID data as well as the Medicare fee-for-service data. So we hope that that addresses some of those concerns there, and I felt like it, you know, it gives a more complete picture. I think that's, for the most part, addressing most of the comments other than thank you again for letting us resubmit. The other thing I guess I should say is I know it came up in the committee towards the end of our discussion that, gee, it would have been great to walk through the methodology at the beginning of the presentation. And I think I apologize for not having done that. I didn't realize the disconnect. And so the memo also details the methodology, which is first you calculate the risk-adjusted rates and the confidence intervals for each of the components. Then you create a uniform indirect standardization of them, smoothing them so they're reliability adjusted. Then you select your component weights. We do use numerator weights that are based on the prevalence of the condition, and then they are combined. So on page 4 of the memo, you can see those weights and then how they're combined. So if anyone has any questions.
Thank you so much, Pam.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll, just to note, we'll send you, resend you all of this information. You should have gotten it or have access to it. But we, just to give you a little bit more time with that, you know, the revised submission and the revised reliability estimates, we'll have you sort of review some documents related to that and the memo related to that before you cast your vote. So we won't, again, be voting on that on this call. But does anybody have any questions for Pam or comments on the revised and reweighted patient safety composite?
Yeah, this is Ed. First of all, a question of procedure. Since we now have a new reweighted, recalculated measure, just again, based on NQF procedure, it's okay to reconsider with the revision?
Yes, I believe it, so. We've had some discussion on this, and we think it would be appropriate. We think we may go through each of the criteria again, voting on each of the criteria because it has changed a bit. We'll do that again via an online survey. But we think it's appropriate in this instance to go ahead and take another look at this since the committee had specifically requested that ARC return with a revised measure and that they wanted to take another look at it at that point.
And then second, something I should know, but I'm sort of blocking on this right now, where it says PSI 07 as an example, central venous catheter-related bloodstream infection rate, that is based on administrative data?
That's correct. All of these indicators are based
right.
on data from the Healthcare Cost and Utilization Project. Mm-hmm.
So, again, I'm assuming based on our prior discussion, this is different than the other publicly reported measure, which is also part of value purchase. Correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And so then the next question I have in following up on that is that what is the validation of, let's say, PSI 07 compared to CLABSI rates as the developer from CDC in this risk adjustment? How do they correlate?
Excellent question. I personally do not have the information at my ready. I certainly could send that to NQF, and Patrick may actually have that information in his head. I know that we actually have looked at this. Unfortunately, it preceded when I was on the project, so I can't speak to it directly.
Okay, well, maybe, Pat, because I think that's what we always run into, I say problems, concerns about administrative data and risk adjustment versus other data, which is also still currently being reported. That's been my concern with this composite measure. The other thing is how you...
This is Lisa McGifford. I think that probably one of the few, I think we can all admit that this data, none of this data is perfect, and Consumers Union is a big advocate for more rigorous validation of the data on the administrative data side, especially, but also on the infection reporting side. But Health Affairs published a piece 3 or 4 years ago about medical errors, and I could provide it to the committee, where the researchers actually looked at the reliability of reporting, and I think the administrative data was right alongside the self-reporting data as not the best way to report, but it's all we have right now. And so I think that while we all want to strive for something better, this is the best we have at this time.
This is Pat Quigley, and I'd like to comment, Andrew.
Yes, go ahead, Pat.
Thank you so much. And I don't know a lot of the evidence surrounding all of these indicators, but, you know, my comment during our meeting is that I thought that there were better measures that should be included if there was going to be a composite measure. I do have issues with one score being used to rate one hospital with another, realizing that really we're not adjusting for age, we're not adjusting for comorbidities of the patient population, and that we have an aging population in our hospitals. So that being said, just to focus on post-op hip fractures, to me, is not the best measure that should be used that's related to any fall-related injury. You know, when you look at the 9 adverse conditions, hospital adverse conditions that the Affordable Health Care Act Partnership for Patients is going after in a very robust way, it is any injury that occurs from a fall for anyone who falls in our care. So, you know, that's really my issue, is that, you know, I think some of these measures really should be reevaluated before they're used in today's world. So that's my comment.
I just want to make sure the committee understands that each one of these indicators are actually risk adjusted for age and gender and comorbidities. So that if you were to look, and each one is a separate model, and if you were to look at the risk adjustment adjusted model, and I apologize that ARC's documentation on this it's in very statistical presentation, which does not make it user-friendly to interpret or to see that, in fact, it's done. But each of the comorbidities in particular are adjusted for. So, for instance, trauma or cancer, that if in total you can see that hospitals actually are credited for the severity and the sickness of the patients.
Thank you so much for those comments. But I'd just like to share to my colleague is that there are many more hip fractures that occur in our hospitals that are not post-op hip fractures. So, you know, I just want to just say that to limit it to post-op hip fractures, and this is only one variable. I know that there's other people on our committee that could speak to others that if you were going to try and use something to get to one score to rate all patients, I just think it would be better to rate the hospitals, on each of these measures and see where they stand. But I think this one could have been changed to all serious injuries that occur from falls, not just the post-op fracture. So thank you for the opportunity to comment, Andrew.
Yeah, this is Jason. Can I follow up? And
yes.
One of the issues that I had when we discussed this last time, I still have, which is I find that people are very confused by this measure because it's a composite of patient safety indicators that the weight is sort of, for each measure, is dictated by the data that they have, which I understand is based on the prevalence. but many people don't completely understand the weight. And so, like to Pat's point, the postoperative hip fracture represents, I think it's 0.07% of everything there. It's so close to zero, yet it's in there as if it's some meaningful part of all this. And if we would a priori decide what is a meaningful patient safety composite, it would look nothing like this or the weights that distributed. Like,
exactly.
If you recall, I made the point that accidental puncture or laceration rate is nowhere near the top 10 preventable things hospitals are working on. Dr. Romano, you know, had mentioned one article that said maybe if we better credentialed providers or had, you know, perhaps. But the things most hospitals are working on that represent really where their standing is in patient safety are, as Pat said, falls. We're working on falls. We're working on pressure ulcers. Pressure ulcers represent 1.4%. So all hospitals across the country are now being rated on the AHRQ PSI 90 composite as if it's a reflection of the work we're doing to work on these preventable patient safety things, but it's not really. If it was a priori, it would be focusing on falls, pressure ulcers, cauties, CLABS, and this is just not a representative of that. And by adding in these three measures, it didn't really change that big picture issue that I had and still have with this measure.
Hi, this is, can I add something?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so just a couple of things. I had, I guess, a question for Pat and her comment about this one measure being used to rate all hospitals. So my understanding, if we're talking just strictly about how the measure is currently in use, is it's one of a number of measures that's being used to rate hospitals. So in addition to this measure that appears on, for example, the Hospital Compare website, there's also, I think at this point, six infection measures, an individual PSI, which is PSI 4, complications from hip and knee replacements. So this is one particular patient safety measure that is a composite among a host of measures that are being used to compare hospitals. And I think from a purchaser and consumer point of view, I think one of the benefits of it is if you have ever tried to go on Hospital Compare and compare hospitals on it, it really is a lot of information. It can be quite intimidating. I think one of the real advantages of a composite is that it brings together a lot of different important patient safety indicators and allows people to look at them, you know, without trying to compare a single hospital on 20 different things and then deciding, you know, how one might be better than the other. I think that a lot of the things that everyone has been talking about, like falls, what's sort of ironic is that there actually used to be measures that CMS had as part of the inpatient quality reporting program that measured more broadly falls and trauma, and those measures have been removed. And so, frankly, you know,
so they were unreliable.
This hip fracture rate, you know, certainly doesn't encompass all falls, but you know, today it's all we have because those other measures have been removed. So I hope people will be really thoughtful about that when they consider this.
I think those other measures were removed because they were claims data and they were unreliable. And I even thought AHRQ PSI 90 was removed. I mean, if I go to Hospital Compare right now, I don't think it's there.
Well, can we all look at that together? Because I'm trying to look at the site, too, and I'm not finding the list.
And this is kind of quickly, since you responded to me, I'm so sorry I missed your name, but my point is that, you know, the measures of today, of yesterday's world and creating this composite are not necessarily the best measures for today's world in 2014 going forward. Well, we do have 9 adverse conditions that hospitals are going after reducing in a very robust way. So I just think that there's other measures that are out there. And I do think if you go out there saying that your hospital is a, you know, 5-star hospital, you know, that's not as informative to the public. I mean, it's not the same thing. Well, I won't reduce it to that, but, you know, I'm trying to think of, there was just recently an article that was published, and someone's going to help me with this, that looked at where the harm was occurring. And it might have been the Dr. John James article that reestimated the estimates of patient harm in hospitals. But, you know, it was the major teaching hospitals that did much worse than community rural hospitals. So, you know, I have such issue with reducing everything to one score, and I do think people are going to hang their hats on it. And I just think that the hip fracture, it should be falls with injury or major injury, because, you know what, colleagues, minor injury in old people can be grave. It's not just a hip fracture. I think that there's just other measures.
Hi, this is Lisa McGifford. I had a question for AHRQ when it's appropriate. I don't want to stop the flow of the conversation. Okay. Is AHRQ developing a new composite measure, thinking about some of the things that people have been raising, but is there work going on now to develop or improve upon this composite measure?
So the question is yes, but let me explain what I mean by a yes. We, our QI contract ended at the end of November. So we unfortunately have not had a contractor who's been able to help us to refine, to continue to refine and develop measures. But it is our mission to continue to refine and develop measures, and we hope to have a contract in place this summer. It is certainly within the contract scope of work to be looking at this in particular, to look at the weighting strategy, which I talked about at the very beginning, to not only account for prevalence, but also account in some way for importance. I think in that same vein, we need to be taking a look at the measures. These were all of the indicators in 2008 and 2009 that were considered by technical experts and clinical experts to be the ones that were most relevant. And so the weighting here in terms of prevalence is not based on the prevalence of one hospital, but rather the prevalence across the entire country for all community non-rehab hospitals in 46 states. That's the near universe. It does not include hospitals in Delaware, hospitals in Idaho, or hospitals in Alabama. And that's it. Everyone else is in here. And so it suggests that, in fact,
I don't think the VA is in there. Isn't that right?
Right. No, it's community non-rehab,
right.
Not the VA, not Department of Defense. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to imply that. I meant outside of the military system. And so, yes, the answer is we will continue to develop it and to look at the, you know, in terms of do we need to add this notion of importance to the weighting strategy. We have reliability and we have prevalence in the weighting schemes. But now what came up in the last steering committee meeting was that we look at importance. And so that's what we'll be doing. In terms of whether or not PSI 90 is in hospital compare, I believe Alex Bowl or Sam Staley may be on the call and can comment on what's in hospital compare.
Sorry to interrupt. This is Alex Bowl from Mathematica. Yes, PSI 90 is on hospital compare. If you were to go to hospital compare and go to the tab for readmissions, complications, and deaths, there is a drop-down tab under surgical complications that it says surgical complications is then the measure, and that's where it's listed on hospital compare.
Right, and it's listed as serious complications, not by its technical name.
But just this is Andrew, just to remind the committee again, we're sort of treading into a little bit of shaky territory here with as an endorsement committee getting into questions of implementation and use. Again, not that they're entirely irrelevant, but to some degree that is the sort of purview of the measures application partnership, the MAP, and is sort of intended to be less of this committee's review than the more sort of scientific review of the measures merits on their own. Just wanted to add that in there, but go ahead with your conversation.
May I make another comment? This is Laura Artisone. Thank you for coming back and putting some new things in there, because that was sort of our discussion, but I'm still hearing the same concern from some of the committee members is, yes, this is a composite measure, but it's not a good composite measure, and that's what we're really concerned about. You know, even again, this accidental puncture laceration rate, this really came up a lot in our conversation, and it's still 31% of the score. I think that's really what we're still concerned about. Yes, we agree that we need a composite measure. It's helpful for it's helpful for patients. It's helpful for consumers. Absolutely, but it needs to be the right measure and not just a number, because people are going to use this number some way, and we need to make sure it's meaningful.
I believe Patrick Romano may have joined us, that he can speak to the inclusion of which indicators. Patrick?
Yes, this is Dr. Romano. I'm on the line now.
So, Patrick, there's been some concern about which indicators are included in the composite as a whole in terms of its clinical relevance, which is, what the committee needs to assess on, and as to whether these are the 11 best clinical elements for the composite, if you can speak to that.
Right. Well, I think, so as people probably know, this composite was developed through a two-stage process, and the first stage was really identifying the individual patient safety indicators. Those indicators had to go through a complex two-stage expert panel review process based on a review of the evidence. So as part of a previous contract, our team with investigators at Stanford University actually proposed a much larger set of potential patient safety indicators. And for a variety of reasons through the process of evidence gathering and discussion, the final set that we know as the PSIs was arrived upon. A number of other indicators, postoperative heart attacks, for example, postoperative pneumonia, were considered and scored too low to be included in the final set of patient safety indicators. This composite was developed through a second stage process, in which the idea was to bring together all of the approved individual measures that included these safety-related complications into a single composite. So we didn't, through this process, we didn't have the ability to go and troll for additional events because those events had been considered and scored lower by previous panels. Now, of course, going forward, ARC would have the ability to potentially consider other patient safety indicators that could be added to the composite. But it's important to understand that this was the end result of this two-stage process. So the indicators had to pass the original review process as individual measures and then go into the composite. Does that address the question?
I think that helps.
This is Kimberly. I have one observation to make from having us go and look on the website of Hospital Compare, and it's a question for actually Patrick and Pam. It seems to me that something I've learned from this discussion is that this composite measure is really maybe misnamed, or it's confusing to those of us that are new to the committee, that this is actually a what's classified on the Hospital Compare site as a post-surgical composite measure. So it's listed on the website as a surgical complication measure and not a hospital-wide measure. So I think that if it were renamed as such, it might clarify for some of us what the goal really is. It still doesn't address the weighting that some of us still are struggling with in terms of, you know, the puncture and laceration weighting to be 31%. That's still a little bit hard for some of us to get our heads around and understand, and it may need some discussion, but I think that at least for what it is or what it is you're trying to measure and assess for the public and for those of us trying to see what we're trying to do, I think it's sounds like a surgical complication measure mm-hmm. and not a hospital-wide measure. That, mm-hmm. Am I correct in that?
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is... go ahead.
Sorry, please.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, what I was going to say is that obviously, how ARC labels the measure is not necessarily how CMS labels the measure on Hospital Compare. But having said that, this measure does include, for some indicators, medical patients as well as surgical patients. But it is true that it is dominated by measures of postoperative complications. And so mathematically, it's more of a surgical measure than a medical measure. But some of these events, iatrogenic pneumothoraces, for example, do occur in medical patients who are having central lines inserted or thoracentesis for medical reasons.
This is Jason Adelman. My issue is similar, but not exactly that. I think, and we discussed it when we met in person, to me it's more the issue of preventability versus currently not really preventable. You know, if it's not really preventable, it's an adverse event, and usually we just get consent and explain the risks, and if it's preventable, it becomes a major patient safety program. So the big patient safety programs that are out there right now are preventing pressure ulcers and falls and clamps and caudies. And at the meeting, I remember, Dr. Mano, I had said that for accidental puncture or lacerations, I didn't recall an AHRQ bundle around that, while there's many, many bundles and IHI initiatives around fall preventions. And I recall you mentioned an article about credentialing, making sure the right doctor was there, something like that. But I just don't think that this patient safety composite is in any way a reflection of the current, you know, patient safety movement that's going on, where many of us are working on falls and pressure ulcers, and the weight is in fact dictated not by an a priori thoughtfulness, even though you described the process of like patient safety officers that are working on preventable things, but more dictated by the prevalence and the data. And so there, I would consider all of the not really major patient safety data in there, noise for the real stuff. So pressure ulcers is something many of us are working on, but it's 1.4%. And accidental puncture laceration, although your point is taken that there may be a way to be careful about credentialing, it is not an IHI or AHRQ bundle right now, and it's mostly noise. And this is this indicator is mostly noise, but it's being interpreted both publicly and with financial penalties as a real measure of patient safety. I just don't think that's what it really is. That's my two cents.
Hi, this is Missy. I think that for the criteria that we're asked to evaluate the measure against, I'm a little confused, I guess, about some of the comments and the direction of the conversation. So in terms of the developers responding to our feedback and coming back, I think they've done a really fantastic job. In terms of the committee members being more clear about how we should have evaluated the measure and gone through the evaluation criteria at the in-person meeting, I think that we could still use some clarification on that. But in terms in general of having what hospitals are working on today dictate the direction of endorsed measures, I don't agree with that, and I don't even know that that's a conversation for this committee. I think, you know, hospitals are certainly working on lots of patient safety initiatives, you know, thank God, but in terms of limiting endorsed measures to the things that hospitals are working on today, I think is not helpful and not necessarily going to move the patient safety movement forward. I think that, you know, we were just talking today about the need for these new radiation measures, and there are a lot of folks on the phone saying, but, you know, geez, we really need some radiation measures, and, you know, that's based on the fact that we know that there's a problem and maybe hospitals aren't doing enough for it. So to say that these things are happening but hospitals aren't working on them today, so we shouldn't be measuring them, to me is not necessarily, you know, the kind of conversation we should be having at the committee level. But if I'm wrong, correct me.
Can I just, this is Jason, because I think that was directed to what I said. It's not that hospitals are working on it. I meant to make the point, but maybe I didn't make it clearer. I was trying to differentiate preventable versus non-preventable. Like, it used to be that ventilator-associated pneumonias were considered adverse events, and before you put someone in a vent, you get them to sign consent. And then Peter Protovost did all this work showing if you hold, keep the bed at 45 degrees and use suction, you can now prevent it, and the rate went significantly down. And now there's something we can do about it, and if your hospital isn't doing it and your rate is high, then that's considered a patient safety issue. It's, so I didn't mean that, like, if you're working on it, it's important. I meant that this is a patient safety indicator, something that hospitals shouldn't let happen to their patients because it's preventable. But we can't have every surgery go perfect. Sometimes there's going to be a complication, and unfortunately there's nothing we can do about it except explain the risks very clearly to patients. We should certainly track it so that maybe eventually 10 years from now or 20 years from now we will prevent them. But right now there are adverse events and not much we can do about it. So I didn't mean to say we should only track stuff we're working on. I mean that patient safety is usually the work of what's preventable. That was my point.
And this is Pat Quigley, and my point, just to clarify, is that there is a better measure specific to falls than post-op hip fractures. And that measure is injurious falls. It is sponsored by and hosted by the American Nurses Association and collected in the NDNQI database. And, you know, ARC knows about it. CMS knows about it. There's over 2,000 hospitals reporting that data to NDNQI. And they're the steward for that. It's an NQF-endorsed measure. So, you know, when you look at what is the best measure, and that's my comment, is I do think that there's better measures that have been out there for some time that could have been integrated into this as the measure that you want to use related to falls. It would be falls with injury if that's what you wanted, or falls. But, again, I'll just say that, you know, when you're looking at an aging population, and that is who we care for, that a minor injury in an old person can be grave. So I just think that there's a better measure. So I still thank you, Patrick, for all you've done, as I said in the meeting, but I just, you know, I just don't support this. So thank you.
This is Lisa McGifford. I just want to address the last two comments, because I really believe strongly that preventability changes over time, and I don't think it necessarily has to take 10 years. But 10 years ago, there were a lot fewer events, infections, and errors that people saw as preventable, and now they see them as preventable because of the work, the kind of work that Jason was referring to. So I think we really have to push the envelope on preventability. And to address Pat's comment, I mean, I agree with you. You've got an NQF measure for falls, and I think that, you know, hospitals should be using it. We should probably be measuring them. But that's a different measure. This is an AHRQ measure that was developed by AHRQ, and what you're asking them to do is take a different measure and substitute it for their measure, when we could have actually both of those measures and give a fuller picture about falls, for example. So I don't think it's an either-or. I think all of this is, you know, putting all these together to get a picture of what's happening in the hospital.
Well, this is Kimberly Applegate, and I just go back to the question for clarity's sake. I'd really like to ask the developers to rename this in some way to make this a procedural complication composite measure. This is not a hospital-wide measure. This is related to procedures. And I think that that's really what Pat is struggling with. These are all procedure-related except for pressure ulcers. Every single thing in here is related to a procedure. Am I right? So is there some willingness to define this in a different way?
Well, I think all those definitions have been in with the measure all along. If you look at what it is, it's connected mostly to procedures. So you're thinking that rather than calling it a...
Yeah, it's not a hospital-wide measure. It's a procedure complication composite measure.
Right.
Hi, this is Josh Rising. I think they clarified earlier, though, that it's not just with procedures, right? The iatrogenic pneumothorax, for example, is for any hospitalized patient. No, it's not for a procedure specifically, I don't believe. Not according to what they said earlier.
Iatrogenic is a what would you consider that? I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That is procedures, but then like pressure ulcers is not really procedures. But the weighting of it is very, it's heavily weighted towards procedures.
But what I'm saying is if you took out pressure ulcer, which is, could be a separate measure in terms of safety, you'd have a composite measure that would be all procedure-related.
Right, that's a good
that's
point.
That's my point. And so I think it's a very confusing composite measure for everyone to get their head around without redefining what it is you're trying to present here.
This is Patrick. If I could just address one point. There were a number of questions and comments related to PSI 15. And just to clarify, PSI 15, accidental puncture or laceration, is a separately endorsed NQF measure. It was reviewed by a separate committee through a detailed review process. The evidence was presented to that committee, including the studies that were commissioned by ARC, as well as VA-funded studies. That measure went through two expert panels that were convened by AHRQ. So the measure has separate endorsement. So to the extent that it's 31% of this composite, that is relatively small component versus having it as a freestanding measure by which it's also endorsed. So I just want to clarify that. With respect to the naming or the contextualization of the composite, I'll have to defer to Pam on that question.
So I apologize. For some reason, my line went dead. And, yes, we could certainly talk about changing the name of it. I mean, it really that would be fine if it makes more sense and provides more context. It's a learning experience. The more feedback we get, the more I see where we can improve, and oftentimes it's just in naming or preventing the information. The other thing I'd like to just point you to, if there was any concern about preventability for PSI 15 and accidental puncture, 49, in the previous initial submission, show that 49.3% of the events were considered preventable, and showed that in some of the materials that we presented prior to the initial meeting.
Thanks, Pam. That's a very good point, because that's very much how I feel about this measure. It's like a mix of, you know, complications and patients, like medical errors and unfortunate adverse events. It's just a mix of it, and it's confusing by the title, because patient safety to me is usually we're focusing on what's preventable right now. I agree with some of the other comments. We should always keep pushing the envelope and converting what's not preventable to preventable. But it's just right now a mixture of it, and maybe the name can somehow reflect it. I don't know how, but.
This is Lisa. I mean, the PSI is the title for all the patient safety indicators that AHRQ has produced, and as Patrick said, not all of these are individually endorsed. And so I'm not sure what it is that you're asking to rename, not the patient safety indicator, but to title it differently. Right, because they are all patient safety events.
Well, I think the title for PSI 90 is Patient Safety for Selected Indicators, and perhaps that selected indicators could be better defined.
Got it. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, everyone. Any more thoughts, comments, or questions for the developers on this issue?
This is Ed on a completely different side of the issue.
Sure.
Are there any unintended consequences of this, of these composite measures?
Is that for the developer?
Sure, anybody else who's had experience with these composites.
So, ARC is not actually aware of any unintended consequences other than the part that's not part of this meeting, which is it used appropriately? And, and that piece of it. But in terms of overall, no. Patrick, can you speak to this more?
I'm sorry, I got bounced off for a second. What are the unintended consequences that you're referring to?
Well, do you know of any unintended consequences for PSI 90, for the implementation of PSI 90?
I am not aware of any unintended consequences. Obviously, there's the number of questions that have been raised about whether this could potentially discourage operations on high-risk patients. And we've responded to those questions by pointing out all the factors that are in the risk model and how all of the patient characteristics that people expressed concern about, like trauma and cancer and so forth, are usually built into the risk adjustment model. So given that, I'm not aware that anyone has actually discriminated against high-risk patients.
Well, this is Ed again. Let me ask it a slightly different way. By holding these composite measures out versus other patient safety things that we might work on, is there anything that says that we're diverting resources away from other potential opportunities?
This is Michelle Schreiber from Henry Ford, and let me just side with Dr. Edelman on this. You know, I think one of the questions has to be why teaching hospitals in particular seem to be very penalized by the third hospital-acquired condition program that, you know, will be kicking in October, and I think part of the reason for it is around the lacerations and accidental punctures that's going to force our organization, quite honestly, to divert resources around this. And I know it sounds a little bit, you know, like sour grapes to say that we're one of those institutions who is going to be negatively affected, but the reality is it will probably prevent us from doing certain surgeries. We have surgeries where we have to have vascular surgeons and other surgeons in the OR because we know it's the complication of the surgery that's being done. And so the answer, I think, is yes, we're going to have to divert resources, and that I'm not sure it's a true reflection of patient safety because of the heavy weight of lacerations and accidental punctures.
But this is Leslie Schultz. To that point, if one reads the operational of the measures, there are ways to account for something that's incident too. It's we're exploring trying to get a tumor out of a deep-seated location. There may be things that happen, but they're intrinsic with this case, with this patient, but it's how we do our documentation that is in our favor.
Right. Yep, and I absolutely understand that, but to the question, are we going to have to divert resources to do this, the answer is yes.
So I would like to speak to that a little bit and going back to something Andrew said at the very beginning, which is I think that that's stepping beyond the bounds. It's ARC's understanding that that's stepping beyond the bounds of what this committee is supposed to be reviewing on. And in that sense, that would be a question for the measures application process or partnership, because that's a meeting where we can talk about how it's used in conjunction with something else regarding a composite that is not, I could not tell you that measure itself in combination with other measures is what's driving your rate. It would all have to be disaggregated, and it's beyond the scope of this particular review because that combination is not actually that straightforward.
Right, and I agree with you. I'm just trying to support some of the conversation that is going on of are there adverse consequences to this? Yes, I believe there are. Are we going to be diverting resources that we would have used for other safety events? Yes. And it does get actually to the point of this committee and that we're looking at the most appropriate measures, and it's come up, you know, now over and over about the appropriate weighting and is that actually correct. So I didn't want to belabor it because, again, I don't want to sound like sour grapes from our organization. But I do think there are some negative consequences that we have to think of.
Well, this is Lisa. I just want to point out that about half of the teaching hospitals are going to are on the list to be penalized, but about half of them are not on the list to be penalized. So I think that we are getting into the territory of saying, you know, at a certain point in time, some hospitals are going to score more poorly than others, and maybe they do need to divert some attention to the issues that put them on that list. And I probably somebody who was harmed by one of these events would say, absolutely, we want this event to be on the list. And someone who was harmed by another event would want something else to be on the list. And I personally hope that someday everything will be on this list, that we will be measuring every event, and that every event will be documented so that the public can really see how safe the hospital is. But I don't think anybody's willing to go there right now.
My one question, I understand what all of you are saying, and obviously we all want the same kind of outcome. To NQF, who's hosting this meeting, what are our next steps around this particular measure? What is it that you're asking us to do at this point?
Well, we will be sending, again, resending the revised measure and Pam's comments and explanations about it. And then we will be asking you to re-vote again on an online survey and to evaluate it again against each of the criteria, and that will be the committee's final recommendation on the measure. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
No, this is just that I felt like there was some confusion during the voting and the in-person meeting about at each stage of the criteria review, whether we're supposed to evaluate the measure as a composite or the individual.
Yeah.
So is there going to be some additional materials around how to do the evaluation for a composite measure?
There will. We will send out some additional materials specifically around composite evaluation, where you should be looking at the components, where you should be looking at the overall score, and so on. All right, well, hearing no other comments, maybe we could go ahead and open the lines up for public comments. I know we've gotten a couple of requests to make comments. Dr. Emmanuel Rivers was on the line earlier and I think wanted to make a comment. Could we have Dr. Rivers' line opened up?
Yes, sir. One moment. I'm not sure you have Dr. Rivers in the main conference at this time.
Okay. We may have lost him. Well, then, could you just open it up for public comment generally, prompt the audience members to submit comments? I think we have at least one who's waiting.
Yes, sir. At this time, if you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We have a comment from Iona Thorian.
Oh, Iona, you should have been on the call all along.
Well, when I joined, I realized she put me on listening. So I just have a quick comment, and I hesitate to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. So back in the day when infections were first being identified, there was a standard rate of infections that were accepted as being normal. And then there was some work done here locally with IHC that demonstrated with prophylactic antibiotics, you were able to actually impact that infection rate tremendously. So that as a metaphor or parallel to the conversation related to lacerations. I get all the conversation that's been made about that these are risks, these are complications, et cetera, et cetera. You're in a teaching hospital. You've got unskilled folks learning how to do it. There's all those issues and complexities associated with that. But I just use the infection rate as an example of how at one time point in time, and this point was made earlier, at one point in time we accepted a status quo as being okay, and we've been able to demonstrate that with focus, measurement, and attention, we actually can improve that status quo. And maybe the laceration is our next challenge in terms of being able to do a better job in the surgical procedural area. That's it.
Thank you, Iona. I'm sorry to have left you off the rest of the call.
Your next comment comes from the line of Jim Duncan.
Okay.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the radiation safety measures, and I think it really sort of echoes what was just said, is that the first step is measuring, and that, I think the measures for radiation safety They're not perfect, but I agree with George Box that all models are flawed, but some are useful. I think all measures are flawed, but some can help drive improvement. We're getting there. It's a long row, but progress is being made. Yes, there are improvements driven by process measures. It's going to be very, very difficult to come up with outcome measures for radiation safety.
Thank you.
Your next comment comes from the line of Michael Phelan.
Hi, Dr. Phelan. Go ahead.
Hello. Fascinating conversation. I'm an emergency medicine physician, and I have some concerns about the NQF 500 measure. I'm kind of concerned about how we got to where we are today in the actual NQF process for measure, re-endorsement, or maintenance. And my big question is, can a measure be altered substantially from its original form and be considered a maintenance issue, or is it a completely new measure? The original NQF Sepsis 500 was endorsed in 2007 and underwent significant modification from the original measure that was submitted. And during that process, they had a huge number, like they currently have now, of elements that we, and the technical expert panel, really felt that they were going to be difficult to implement. We didn't like some of the science behind some of the elements and the feasibility of using it. The original measure submitted 4 years ago had multiple elements, and we worked with the measure developer at the time and came to an amicable agreement about, you know, getting it down to like four reasonable elements that could be utilized broadly as a quality measure: cultures, antibiotics, lactate, and fluids. These were ones that we really felt had an impact on the outcome. And because it could be translated either with a manually abstracted record or from clinical data from an EHR if that time ever came. And so when this measure came up for maintenance and re-endorsement, the worrisome elements that were eliminated by the first technical expert panel, they kind of got brought back to life and re-put into the measure. So I guess to the body that's reviewing this and NQF itself, it's how much can a measure be materially altered from the originally submitted and still be considered a maintenance versus a submission of a new measure? I couldn't imagine just listening to this conversation, the PSI measure, being that material altered and not considered a full new measure versus a new submission. And just a couple other points just about from what we heard before. It was terribly enlightening to hear some of the challenges of converting some of this medical research into a utilizable, payer-used, nationally recognized quality metric. And I think there's a lot of work that could be done and supported, you know, through either grants or measure development foundations or something to take this translation, because it seems like there's a big gap between, you know, the medical research and how to translate that into a usable quality metric. And I'll just thank you for letting me have the time to speak.
Thanks, Dr. Phelan. Just to respond to a couple of your comments, I think that is that's a fair question about when a measure should be considered a completely new measure or remain a maintenance measure. I think that's something we can have some discussion about internally. I know Measure 500, the sepsis bundle, did actually undergo a maintenance review just 2 years ago, I believe. Again, this is not a maintenance review of that measure. This is an ad hoc review of that specific element of the measure. But I think that is worth having some discussion here when a measure is resubmitted for maintenance and has changed significantly, whether that should be considered a new measure or indeed a maintenance measure. But I think based on our discussions and deliberations here, to date, I think we feel comfortable taking in the ARC composite measure and reviewing it again at this time. But we'll have some further discussion on that, if you know, we can think about it for future reference as well. Are there any other public comments? Sorry, go ahead.
For public comments, please press star one. Your next comment comes from the line of Matthew David.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Matt Davis. I'm calling from Tier Memorial Hermann Rehab Hospital in Houston. You guys may remember me. I attended the April face-to-face meeting, and I was talking about the quality measure as it relates to spinal cord injury patients.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just wanted to kind of report to you guys that when these measures are tied to public reporting and financial accountability, you definitely do see a change of response as to what's being done. I'm seeing that I'm having, you know, most of my patients are coming to me from facilities that are pulling catheters in spinal cord patients. I think that, you know, one of the things that I see here is we have two different sets of guidelines that are kind of at odds with each other. We have the guideline for prevention of caudies that was put forth by the CDC written in 2009. And then you have the clinical practice guidelines for neurogenic and bladder put forth by the Consortium for Spinal Cord Medicine, which is, you know, once again, it's just kind of a small subspecialty that we're talking about here. The irony is that both sets of these guidelines will agree to the evidence supporting in and out capping over indwelling in terms of UTI risk is very weak. So, you know, I mean, a lot of studies being published today will not find a statistically significant difference in UTI risk between those two bladder management methods, which I think is one reason why the CDC had recommended that you consider removing indwelling catheters. It was considered a Category 2 recommendation, which is their weakest recommendation. It said that before, you know, it's a public policymakers should, you know, only consider enforcing this particular measure, this particular portion of the measure after a substantial debate. I think when you look at the clinical practice guidelines that were put forth by the Consortium of Spinal Cord Medicine, I mean, these guidelines are essentially being ignored. They're not well publicized, and they're being not being followed. There's kind of widespread of non-compliance with these guidelines because people are more focused on the CAUTI guidelines. And I think the thing that concerns me the most is the Consortium for Spinal Cord Medicine's guidelines look at the entire patient. So you look at not just UTI risk, but you look at issues such as, you know, concerns about renal failure, hydronephrosis, quality of life of the patient, and take those all into account. It's a literature review that was done by neurourologists, not just general urologists, but neurourologists and spinal cord injury specialists. And when you look at the CAUTI measure, most of the, you know, people listed on the sheet are epidemiologists, infectious disease docs. They do say there is one general urologist who is involved in it. And so, you know, this is still a, you know, continuous source of frustration to me. I'm presenting on this topic at a national meeting in September. We're working on a petition that we're going to circulate to the American Spinal Injury Association, but I kind of get the sense that the folks at the CDC are, feels like to me, are dragging their feet on this. And I'm wondering, is there something that the NQF can do to help, you know, move this forward? It seems like a very small thing to me to exclude this very small portion of patients.
Well, I think the standing committee was very supportive of that your comments and potentially excluding that population from the measure. I have gathered you've been in communication with the CDC. Is that correct? I guess things have not been proceeding at the pace you'd hoped.
Well, the thing that I'm concerned about is that institutional habits are being formed here. So policies are being written, you know, hospital policies are being written to take into account these, you know, this CAUTI measure. And, you know, people are not, you know, if we come up with some sort of exclusion for spinal cord patients 6 months down the line, all these hospital policies are going to be written, people's practice patterns are going to be changed, and there's a lot that needs to be undone at that point. And I kind of sense there's a reluctance on the CDC's part. I'm not sure exactly where it is. I know that they're kind of epidemiologists. They want to track, you know, UTIs, and they want to keep tracking UTIs in spinal cord patients, maybe not report them, which I guess is fine, except their definition of UTI is not even a definition that would be accepted in a you know, if you're going to publish an article on UCI in spinal cord patients. And so I'd like to hit the fast forward button a little bit because, yeah, I think that the longer we wait to get this done, the more undoing there will be and the more work it's going to be to undo some of these hospital policies that are being written. And I've had patients who've told me that, such and such, LTAC would not accept me as a patient until my Foley was removed. That bothers me.
Yeah, this is Ed. Great comment. I know that the CDC was very open to further discussions with you regarding this area. So do I hear that you and Dr. Pollack have not perhaps hooked up since the meeting?
We've hooked up. We've had a couple of emails that have gone forward. And my last email was about 2 weeks ago, and it wasn't ever responded to. I mean, they brought up some kind of interesting logistical challenges with excluding spinal cord patients, and I can appreciate that. And I know that they're very busy and have a lot of other stuff that they're working on.
So are you planning to go to the HCTEC meeting next later this week?
I realize, I would love to do that. I'm actually going to be at a different conference at that time and won't be able to attend.
Because that would be the body that might be a good one for you to
I know. I just realized that last week I was going to call in and I realized I'll literally be in a plane flight at that time, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, they are considering a change in the definition of the UTI again, so.
Yeah, okay.
But that's a little separate from, I think, the original issue you brought up. And, if I can help facilitate conversation with Dr. Pollack and the folks at CDC, I'm more than happy to. But I know that, that he really thought you did bring up some very good issues. But like many things on the federal level, as you just mentioned, there's a lot of there's a lot on their plate. That's not an excuse.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will reach out to them again, but I just wanted to, didn't want people to be pacifying me and trying to placate me and hoping I would go away. I mean, I want people to take this seriously and I guess it's okay with me if it does take a while, but I'd like to keep raising this issue because it's, I am seeing this in patient care.
Well, I think that's why we have these are completely open, and comments like yours are taken very seriously. So keep honest if we're not responsive.
Well, thank you so much for, having these comments open, and I, appreciated meeting you guys last April, and, I'll reach out to Dan Pollack again and see if we can scooch the process forward, one more step.
And we can certainly emphasize that point again, the committee's feeling on this and that they have urged the developer to make this change as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other public comments?
No, sir. There are no further public comments at this time.
All right.
Actually, it looks like we have a Catherine Allen who raised her hand on the webinar. If you'd like to make a comment.
Could we have Catherine Allen's line opened up?
No. Hello.
Her line
Hello.
Open.
Are you
Hi.
On?
Yes, I am. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually was trying to get in on the conversation. I'm representing the CDC today. I want to make sure that the committee is aware that this is not something that we are trying to drag our feet on. It's not anything that we're trying to push off. It is something that we are definitely taking into consideration, but we do have other considerations that come into this. I think that it's important to point out that the guidelines that are put out by HCTAC for CAUTI prevention are very clear in that thorough clinical assessments should be made before any catheters are withdrawn from patients, including especially those with spinal cord injury. So the CAUTI measure does not in and of itself suggest that indwelling Foley catheters should be removed from all patients. And we think it's very important that there be some education as these measures are put forward for proper clinical assessments be made. One of the issues that we are trying to do is that we are, one, we are collecting information, working with rehab facilities on our annual assessment for NHSN. We are collecting information about the proportion of patients that have spinal cord injuries so that we can make some educated decisions about how we move forward with this group. We do not feel at this point in time that the proper management is to simply exclude this population. This population is at risk for Prakati, and as a result, we want to include them, but we do want to possibly stratify rates of infections based on this element of risk. We have talked with Dr. Davis a few times. We've also talked to other individuals from rehab facilities, and so I do want to make sure that the committee does not leave here thinking that this is something that we haven't addressed or that we're not continuing to address.
All right, thank you for that comment. Any other public comments on the line?
No further. No further comments at this time.
All right. Well, I think we can wrap up then at this point. Just to remind you again, we will be sending the committee members some additional materials. We'll lay out exactly what the decisions are before you and the process for voting on the measures if that should be what the committee decides to do. We'll probably have sort of a staged voting first on whether or not you would like to reconsider your decision on a couple of these measures. And then if you do, we'll hold the vote after that on the actual measure. But again, we'll follow up with more information, both on what we're asking you to decide on and some additional background on some and context for the decisions as well. Katie, did you have anything to add in terms of next steps?
No, just that, you know, what you said. We'll be sending the information and the voting links. And then we're looking to post the report for NQS member voting by next Friday, the 25th, so we will have somewhat of a quick turnaround with asking for your responses. But as of right now, we're looking to open voting on next Friday.
Thanks, Katie. All right. Well, with that, we'll let
Can I ask a question real quick about a quick turnaround? You're going to post them on Friday and expect us to vote on Friday?
Well, no. We'll get you the materials before then. I think we want Katie was talking about the NQF member vote, actually. So our report will be posted on our website for a member vote once the committee has made its final recommendations, which is...
Okay, sorry.
No problem. All right, well, I think we'll let you go at that. Thank you all so much for joining us, taking the time to come on this call and having a robust discussion again. We appreciate your time, and we will be in touch soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.